From next month, Australians on the minimum wage will see a boost to their wages of 8.6%. Others on award wages, about a quarter of the workforce, will get 5.75%. It is obviously welcome assistance as we battle the rising cost of living, but much of that is already being eaten up by rising inflation, and some economists believe the Fair Work Commission's ruling makes it even more likely that the central bank will lift rates when it meets tomorrow. Jim Chalmers is the Federal Treasurer. He joins me now. Welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks very much, Hamish.
What are you and your government doing to seriously tame inflation?
Well, the budget took inflation really as the central challenge in our economy because it's the central challenge being faced by people right around Australia. And that's why we had that carefully calibrated cost of living package, which is designed to take some of the edge off these cost of living pressures that people are facing without adding to inflation. And as the Reserve Bank governor said just last week, he said, I don't think the budget is adding to inflation. It's actually reducing inflation, and that's our objective.
So how is it reducing inflation, given that we saw inflation numbers jump from 6.3% to last month's figures of 6.8%?
Well, first of all, on the monthly figures, there's a couple of things going on there, but principally the timing of the excise change last year impacted the monthly figure, which is volatile and bounces around. It's really clear that inflation peaked in our economy around Christmas time, and it's been moderating since then. Not as fast as we would like. It is more persistent than we want it to be.
Do you remain confident that inflation is moderating? Is that still your view despite those numbers?
Yes, that's still my view, Hamish. And more important than that, it's still the view of the Reserve Bank and the Treasury. Yeah, the quarterly inflation number is the one that they watch. It's been moderating since Christmas, and that's important, but we'd like it to moderate faster. We've made no secret of that, and that's why the budget, in important ways, including, for example, our energy relief plan, which takes about 0.75% off the inflation figure next year, it's designed to do that. So what we've tried to do and what we are doing and what the Reserve Bank Governor has said we are doing is taking some of the edge off these cost of living pressures without adding to the inflation challenge that we've had in our economy really since at least the beginning of last year.
The RBA governor, though, remains of the view that the big challenge confronting the economy with regards to inflation is weak productivity growth. What are you doing about productivity?
Well, we've got a really substantial productivity agenda, and there are two ways you can go about it. One way we think is counterproductive, which is to make people work longer for less. That's not our approach. Our approach for productivity is to invest in energy, to invest in technology, to make sure that people can adapt and adopt technological change by having the right skills to be more productive, because a more productive workplace is one where wages are growing more substantially and the economy is growing more substantially. So that's our objective. The budget was in large part about that as well. But when the governor was talking about productivity, he made another really important point, which comes to your introduction and some of your early questions so far in this interview, which is we don't have an inflation challenge in our economy because people on the lowest incomes are being paid too much. I mean, that's really clear. The governor has said he's not worried about nominal wages growth. The Fair Work Commission, when they handed down their decision, said they didn't think there would be a wage price spiral in our economy. But more broadly, in looking for this sustainable, responsible wages growth that we all want to see in our economy, we do need to make our economy more productive as well. That doesn't mean working longer for less. It means investing in the skills and capabilities of our people.
But so you acknowledge, don't you, that if you are going to have increasing wages, you have to have improving productivity. You accept that?
Yeah, we want strong, sustainable, responsible wages growth in our economy, and we want it to be accompanied by a more productive, more competitive, more innovative economy as well. We want this to be a win-win for Australians everywhere.
So in this moment where we're about to see the lowest paid workers get a fairly significant bump in their pay, you'd acknowledge that the plans, the objectives, I think you described them as in terms of productivity, are much longer term. So we're not really seeing that corresponding productivity improvement, are we?
But productivity is not our only priority, Hamish. We also want to make sure that when particularly the lowest paid workers are bearing disproportionately the brunt of these cost of living pressures, that they get the return on their effort that they need and deserve to support their loved ones. And that's why we welcome the decision from the Fair Work Commission last week to give about 80,000 workers on the minimum wage an extra $1.85 an hour, and an extra almost 3 million workers to get that 5.75% increase as well. Once again, Hamish, it's really important that your listeners recognise our inflation problem is not because the lowest paid workers are getting paid too much. It's not because of the budget, which is taking the edge off inflation rather than adding to it. Our inflation challenge in our economy is because of a war in Ukraine and busted supply chains and a decade of neglect and all of these other issues that the government is working methodically to address.
There were 71 recommendations in the Productivity Commission's report that you released earlier this year. How many of those have you actually moved on?
Well, a substantial portion of those are already part of the government's agenda. You think about there was issues in there around skills, for example, some recommendations around migration, some recommendations around the safeguard mechanism being the primary way to drive down emissions in our economy. And so a substantial part of it was already part of our agenda. There's lots of common ground there. And another big chunk of the recommendations are for the states and territories to implement, and that's on the agenda for my next meeting with the treasurers too. So I know that the kind of common perception, because the last time the PC report handed a report to the former government and they didn't act on any, there's a common perception that we're not. That's not true. There is substantial common ground. There are areas that we are advancing, and there are other areas that the states and territories are considering as well. We don't agree unanimously with the report, but there's enough common ground in there, I think, to work with.
Business groups this morning are launching this campaign against the same job, same pay legislation. Is it possible that these changes you're trying to introduce might actually have a negative impact on productivity figures?
No, Hamish. No, of course not. What we're talking about here is making sure that labour hire or casual work or gig work is used the right way and not the wrong way. It's not unusual or uncommon for employer peak groups to express a view about industrial relations. There'll be areas where we've got similar views and there'll be some areas where we don't. We're realistic about that. But our responsibility is to govern for the whole country. Our priorities, as we've said for a really long time now, are secure jobs and better pay. Part of that is making sure that these arrangements work for people. And we'll continue to consult with employers, but also unions and communities in the usual respectful way to bed down these changes later in the year.
Can I just get you to address, though, the substance of some of what these groups are saying? And it's not just employer groups, it's farmers as well joining quite a coalition there. They're saying that these changes would mean that employers would lose the ability to recognise someone with more experience by paying them better than someone that was more junior and less experienced. Is that fact?
No, it's not about that at all, Hamish. This isn't about...
But is it a consequence of these changes?
No, Hamish. This isn't about stopping businesses rewarding experience. It's about making sure that workers are eligible for the pay and conditions that the employers have agreed with their workforces. It's about closing loopholes to make sure that labour hire, for example, or casual workers or gig workers are used in the way that they're intended. We recognise that there's a role, for example, for labour hire, whether it's expert work, whether it's surge capacity. We know that there's a role there, but we don't want to see it used as a sort of an ongoing way to undermine and undercut people's pay and conditions that have been negotiated with employers. That's our motivation here. It's not about trying to prevent businesses from recognising differently the levels of experience that their workers have.
On housing, the Greens have offered a compromise, they say, on the Future Housing Fund. They're calling for $2.5 billion a year in spending on social and affordable housing instead of their initial $5 billion request. They also want a rent freeze. That's generally the space of states and territories dealing with things like rental caps or freezes. Can you even deliver on something like that if indeed the negotiation went there to get your future housing fund through?
Well, you're right, Hamish. It is primarily a matter for the states, but the Prime Minister in good faith has shown leadership at the National Cabinet to try and get tenants' rights on the national cabinet agenda and taken seriously by the states, and we're pleased that some of the states are doing that. Look, our position here, Hamish, as you can probably anticipate, is we try and work as constructively as we can, but we've already taken steps to address issues raised by the crossbench. We've already got a really broad and ambitious housing agenda. So the time for these ambit claims and political games in the Senate is over. It's time to pass the legislation and build these tens of thousands of homes for the people who need them most. And if the Greens really support more social and affordable housing, they'll vote for it.
On PwC, obviously that story has rumbled on. Do you know how many contracts there are from the Commonwealth with PwC at the moment?
Well, obviously there's a substantial amount of business that the government does with PwC. I don't know the precise number of contracts that's managed in a different part of the government. But what we have done since being made aware of this really appalling behaviour that people have got a right to be absolutely filthy about is we've worked through a decisive and methodical response. You know, I'm cleaning up the Tax Practitioners Board, already got legislation in the Parliament to that effect. Treasury referred it to the Federal Police. The Finance Department is strengthening the procurement framework. And we're asking people to take into consideration this behaviour when they award future contracts. And if there's more that can be done beyond all of that, obviously we're prepared to consider it. We think that there has been a substantial breach of faith and a substantial breach of trust here. And we need to get on top of it so that people can have faith in the way that these things are done into the future. At the same time, as we rebalance a bit, away from the overuse of external contractors and consultants and try and rebuild capacity in the Australian public service.
Very briefly, because we have to go, penalties. Do you think there should be penalties for PwC for what they did?
Well, first of all, let's see. Let's let the AFP process play out. I think that's important. Treasury's referred them to the AFP, and there are other steps we're working through. But those cleaning up the Tax Practitioners Board, the AFP referral, and the steps being taken on procurement, I think, represent a pretty decisive and methodical response. And if more needs to be done, we're prepared to consider it.
Jim Chalmers, thank you very much.
Thanks, Hamish.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.